Blog Talk Radio.
From Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And as of today, November 18th, 2010, there are 916 days left until the ancient object of the crossing down returns and crosses down in front of the moon. And welcome to the show tonight. I've been looking forward to getting back at this Blog Talk Radio podcasting business. Unfortunately, I've been very busy lately with some other commitments and early mornings, and so I want to apologize to my regular listeners for making you wait weeks and weeks. But it's good to be back, and I want to also at this point thank all the people that have actually contacted me and given me some feedback. One of my last few shows, my last show and the show before that, I think it was, during that time frame, I received some really positive feedback, and it continues to trickle in, and it's been really interesting. It's pointed me in some different directions. I've got some good info, and I want to thank everyone who's contacted me and to give me their 2 cents, and I appreciate that very much. And I also want to point people back to my show, The Quran. I'm still getting feedback on that show. People are listening to the show, and so the feedback has been positive. And it does take me basically the whole show to make my point. But without getting into so many of the typical areas that people get into when they're talking about the issues related to the Quran and different religions, I make a point that I think is valid and hopefully helpful in the big picture of things for everybody. And that point does point the way towards one of my ultimate goals, and that is to hopefully see people on this planet getting along better with one another after the ancient object comes and goes, comes to pass, as they used to say, and as we still do say, as it turns out. And people see the changed light, and they see the human forms within the changed light, and they realize for the first time in modern times that we all have this very special event in common, and we all have a common origin, and all religions are correct, and everybody's right. And if anyone's wrong, we're all equally wrong. And it is about being right and not splitting hairs and arguing over points. We're all descended from ancient ancestors who saw the changed light. And the proof of that is us, ourselves. We are the proof of that. And so hopefully in the future people will get along better after this, what is going to be a huge, momentous event, a turning point in history. The big thing that happens is nearing and getting ready to roll down across in front of the moon. There's an, it's not just a returning object, but it's an entire event, and it's incredibly significant and profound, and it will change history. It will change the world. And this is really what we all need. We need a change in direction, hopefully a positive change in direction. And this will provide it, because it's the lasting light event, the change in lasting light event that this object generates with the moon and the light from the background of space is profound, and the meaning is there for people. And hopefully we will get along better. And that really is the point of the Quran show that I did, and the point of my Quran page, ultimately. And so I'm very pleased to be getting feedback on that, because when I look at the big picture and try to figure out where everything fits in and where I fit in, I want to point the way forward past this event, what happens afterwards, the aftermath of what will hopefully be another safe return. People hopefully will seize the moment and look at their neighbors, whether they're across the street or across the world, and realize that, you know, all the arguing and the fighting really is a waste of time, and it's time to get on with building a better world. And so, the topic of tonight's show is Return Viewer's Guide, number 2, part 3. And once again, I'm going back and looking at my Return Viewer guides. I have 5 separate guides, basically. And all those guides can be found in my book. And all the content from my book is free online. I don't sell my information. I do have a book for sale, the Return Viewer's Guide. And it is a historic document, and it is a collector's item, and eventually people will realize that. In the meantime, you know, I do hope you buy my book, but in the meantime, the sales will come later, and eventually you'll hopefully get around to buying a book as a souvenir. It's sort of the official, I say, it's sort of the official guide of tour guide, viewer's guide for this event. But in the meantime, you can go online to my main website, returnviewersguide.ca, and check my homepage, my page, Return Viewer's Guide for Use with a Small Backyard Telescope, and my page, I'm Absolved. And all the content from my book is found there. And so you can check that out. And yes, that's me writing. I'm not a writer, as you can tell. My amateur style shows through, and the errors that you'll see on the webpage are right there in the book as well. Well, that's another story, but not one I'm going to get into right now. But it does make it genuine. I can at least say that about it. In the meantime, your patience is appreciated, because, in fact, you'll need to have patience when you read my stuff and when you listen to my shows. You'll have to have patience. And so, once again, thank you for your patience. And I do have a page called Patience, and I would point people towards that and read through that, and I get into the idea of patience. And I'm just an ordinary dad who saw something incredible when he was a kid, and I write about it today. And I'm an amateur writer and an amateur radio talk show host. But I did see the object, and I can describe the object and the changed light event and some of the effects the changed light has on the viewer. And I can describe how you see, and I get into that, into as much detail on that as possible over and over again as part of my effort to help the viewers understand what they're going to see and how they're going to see it. Because there are many differences. The changed light allows you to see in ways you're not used to seeing. And the remote camera view that you get is totally out of the normal experience. You're just not used to seeing from somewhere else. basically you see from the place you look towards, and then you look from there to somewhere else, and eventually you're seeing from there, and so on and so on. That is part of the trick to it. You need to use that effect to your advantage, and you'll hopefully be able to see from deep, deep within the changed light, and you'll have foreknowledge because you'll have heard it here. There's nowhere else you're going to hear this. People aren't putting this out there because they just don't know this. And that brings me to a point here where I have actually lots of things on the go here, and most of them it'll take me some time to get some of this stuff out there. And so I'll have to have some patience, and I'll have to make sure I do this right, in the right order, things like that. But I can tell you that I'm working on a show right now, or I'm actually writing this show. It's different for me to do that. I do have bits that I read that are written, obviously, as you know. I'm going to read my intro here, and I'm going to read from the Return Viewer's Guide. But I am going to be putting a show out there that basically is related to dispelling or addressing some of the misinformation that's out there today, namely the idea that when this object returns, it's automatic doom and gloom, and it's destruction, and all the way through Zachariah Sitchin's ideas, through other people's ideas and thinking, where that just doesn't describe what happens. Now, if you listen to my show, you'll hear exactly what happens. So on one hand, my job is to describe what happens. The sites that I know, I describe in detail, and I don't guess. And then I do guess about what happens next based on knowing what the first part of the event is like. But keeping in the theme of my page, the NLT, and especially my page, Nobody Lives There, I am going to be pointing towards some of today's ideas that are completely, totally off. And it's something I usually have been staying away from. But when I listen to various radio shows and listen to various ancient history experts and I listen to their theories and or basic supposed facts, I just have to shake my head. And normally I even find it hard to listen to them because I know they're so far off. But lately I've been paying a little bit more attention, and I've found a source where I'm going to be pointing out to people. I'm going to be going through that list of shows, and I'm going to be picking out points in time, minutes and seconds for you to refer to, and I'm going to be addressing those points. It's kind of at random, and it's not with any hostile intent. This is me just trying to do the right thing. And, you know, by the time the object comes and goes, these people have made their money. And, hey, guess what? You were wrong. Oh, well, I mean, it's nobody's fault, and it's not my fault. And I'm not so smart or anything. But, you know, what really happens. And if your guesses were wrong, well, your guesses were wrong. And that's the way it is. I don't really care about the majority of your guesses that are wrong. But what I do care about relates to the idea of hope and the fact that there's such a thing as a safe return. And the evidence of a safe return will be there in front of you when you see the object rolling down with its standing stone craters, its mound coming over the top, and its moon-colored surface. When you see that object, you're going to be forced to realize that, in fact, I did see that. And you'll also be forced at the same instant to realize that it's obvious that there is such a thing as a safe return. I can't guarantee complete safety on the ground. I know there's a huge potential for a downside here. But the last two returns were safe events, and that is a fact. And so when you see the object and you see that my descriptions match, you'll know automatically that everyone out there who says this is automatic doom and gloom destruction on the earth and all that sort of thing, that is automatic. You'll know that they're wrong, that they were guessing and that they were wrong. Of course, that's only a small starting point, but my point is that safe starting point does exist. So when you see the objects rolling down, you can know for yourself that it can cross in front of the moon and pass down below and beside the sun without causing destruction on the earth. This is a huge point. And this is why, for me, I would take the time to look at the work of some other people and say, sorry, but you're wrong. It doesn't mean automatic destruction. This object has an incredibly stable, precise orbit. It does a certain specific sculpting and shaping with its shadows in the changed light. The results are there to be seen. And if the object didn't have a completely stable and predictable orbit, there's no possible way that these sights could possibly be generated within the light of the changed light from the moon. There's just no way. It's a cause and effect. It's a cause and effect situation, and this object is not some out of control thing that happens wildly and causing destruction at every passing and crossing down. This object can cross safely. It's got a precise orbit. Our solar system is a very, very precise system, and this object is part of it. And it's as simple as that on one hand. And so that's why I'm going to be taking the time to point out the work of others when they point towards automatic doom and gloom, because that's just simply wrong, and it's not helpful. And there's a lot of ways people can help, and that isn't one of them. You can forget all about December 21st, 2012. Nothing is going to happen. Instead, in all probability, May 22nd, 2013 is the date of the next return, as I very accurately described, having seen the ancient object cross down in 1970. By listening to or reading my descriptions of the ancient celestial object I saw and my descriptions of the changed and lasting light event that is generated by the ancient object, a person has a chance to hear the basic idea of exactly what happens when the ancient object crosses down. A person can do this without having to decide for themselves whether or not my descriptions are accurate and whether or not I am a credible person. I freely provide my descriptions without any expectation that you or anyone else will believe my descriptions. People believing my descriptions is not the point for me, or even very important for me. Instead, the point is people have a chance to hear exact descriptions of what happens when the ancient object crosses down in front of the moon, even though these people can't and don't have any way of knowing if my descriptions are real or not. I can do this. I can accomplish this goal without actually needing to provide proof of what I saw. And I'm just going to take a quick sip of my tea. I'm drinking tea tonight instead of coffee. I'll be right back. Thank you. As a boy back in 1970, I saw the ancient celestial object that crosses down between the earth and the moon. The ancient celestial object that I saw is the ancient object of the crossing down. The very same celestial object that the ancient people always look forward to seeing. The moon-colored forward-rolling object crosses down between the earth and the moon. The crossing ancient object intercepts and changes and transforms the light from the moon and the light from the background of space. The ancient object has hundreds of incredible, impressive craters. Every crater is neatly ringed by massive, towering, vertically standing crater rim pieces. A shadow develops on the surface of the crossing, speeding object. Each of these vertically standing crater rim pieces casts its own individual shadow. All of the individual shadows travel off the surface of the crossing object into the distance of the moon's captured and transformed light. To the right, find and follow the biggest, tallest, pointy black shadow into the distance to the right. A very incredible effect occurs. Excuse me for a second again, another sip. A very incredible effect occurs. Each individual shadow somehow sculpts and shapes and creates solid-looking forms and shapes with and out of the moon's changed and now suddenly lasting light. Incredibly, the interactions between the individual shadows and the wave of the shadow as I describe and the change from lasting light somehow happens exactly the same way every time this repeating event reoccurs. When I describe what I saw happen during the ancient object's last crossing down, I am also describing exactly what is going to happen and exactly what will be seen the next time the object crosses down. The ancient celestial object I saw and describe is in fact the ancient object of the crossing. The ancient object crossed down and obscured the moon's disk. The night of May 24, 1926, as described by German amateur astronomer Mr. W. Spill. I believe I saw the ancient object of the crossing down between the Earth and the Moon the evening of May 18, 1970. With the Moon correct and the double star spicer in place in the background of space, I predict the ancient object will cross down again the night of May 22nd, 2013. We will see either way, no matter what, the ancient object will return and cross down in front of the moon and change the light from the moon and the background of space again, and that's guaranteed. And that is 100% guaranteed. Even if I have the date wrong, and of course I could have the date wrong, although I believe this is the night, May 22nd, 2013. But either way, no matter what, the object will return. It's an orbiting member of the solar system, and that has no choice. There's no other option. The object orbits, and it will be back. Earlier I mentioned I have a book for sale, and I do. And I'm looking forward to when my book starts to sell. It'll sure help myself and my two children out. And it'll help us into the future. That's going to be great. I look forward to that situation developing. In the meantime, my book's content is online free. And I do things different than other authors. Most authors, I'm sure, would never think to do that. Or that, but I guess on the other hand, some probably do. But normally, you don't get the whole book online. And I do it this way. I am doing it this way because I understand that my information is very important. And eventually, other people will need to be able to get a hold of that information. And so that's why I have the information all online for free. I don't sell my information, but I do have a book for sale. And like I mentioned earlier, it is a historic document and collector's souvenir, and eventually people will realize that. Just quickly here, if you're in the Ontario area, the Niagara Peninsula, Hamilton, Ontario area, you can pick up a copy of my book at Brian Prince Bookseller, and that's www.princebooks.net. And if you're in the Mississauga, the Toronto West, Mississauga area, you can stop by Booker's Bookstore, www.bookersbookstore.ca, and call ahead, make arrangements to pick up a copy of my book. And if you're interested in having it signed, just let the people there know, and they'll contact me, and I will make sure I stop in and sign your book for you. It'd be my pleasure. And so go ahead and do that. And perhaps one day, or also I just want to mention that you can also buy my book online at any online booksellers. Go to my returnguidebook.ca website and hit one of the links there. It'll bring you to an online bookseller. Eventually, I'm going to have a post office box where you can send your book with a paid return envelope, and I will sign your book and send it back to you. I think that's a plan I'm going to do one day. And so keep an eye out for that. It could be, it could be some 916 days from now, perhaps, before I do that. 916 nights left. Well, I guess it'll probably be a little bit after that, but it may take that long before you realize that you might want my book and might even think the idea of me signing it would be a good idea. And that's okay. I understand. I actually, there's a couple of funny stories related to me signing my book and mentioning to people about my book, and if they want me to sign it, I'd be happy to do that. And get some funny looks, and I know people are thinking, well, why would I want you to sign your book? Like, I know that's what authors do, though. They sign their books for people. And so I know in the big picture of things, you know, I will probably do a lot of signing, but eventually, you know, only so many are going to get signed. And it is a historic document and a collector's souvenir. And for someone who's able to realize that, then getting me to sign the book is like a no-brainer for them. But for other people, through no fault of their own, I understand that. They look at me and wonder, why the heck would they want me to sign the book? But the day will come, and I'll be happy to sign your book for you. So keep that in mind. I'm not here to blow my own horn. Unfortunately, I'm stuck in what I consider a difficult situation. I've been accused of doing this to become well known. A space historian said that about me, said that to me. In fact, he said that to me in front of my two children, basically called me a liar. Well, I waited over 35 years to do something about this. And if becoming well known was really high on my list, I certainly wouldn't have waited over 35 years before I started to do something about this. So, you know, he's wrong. I'm forced to do something about this, and because I know I have an obligation, and I know at this point in time I am absolved. But for this fella, as soon as we had a really productive meeting, but as soon as I mentioned the standing stone craters on the object, that was it. It was too much to digest, too many things that were profound piled on top of each other, and it seemed obvious to him that that it's as simple as me lying and wanting to become well known. Well, you know, what's one of those don't call me, I'll call you things now for us? It's too bad. You know, I put something on the table for him, and if it's all about money, then he could have made some. But in the meantime, you know, there's where I have that's my problem. You know, I have hard feelings there, and, you know, I'm being honest, trying to do the right thing, and then a space historian accuses me of doing this to become well known, or his exact words, I think you're doing this to become well known. Well, sorry, pal, that's not the way it works for me. I would rather not be a part of this. I'd rather not become well known. And if I hadn't have done something about this, let's just say someone else popped out and started to put this out there, and I put my hand up and jumped up and down. Oh, yeah, and I saw it too. Yeah, sure, buddy. Yeah, you saw it too, did you? Well, there's a situation there where that could have easily happened, and I didn't care. It'd be just fine with me if someone else was doing it. That was the whole point of waiting so long. I was hoping someone was doing this so I didn't have to. But here I am, I'm stuck in the situation of having to report the details of the object and the change light and what you see beyond the horizon. And it's not easy, but it is what it is. And so I am doing my best, and there will be people who accuse me of lying, and there have been, and there'll be more. Eventually, they'll be forced to realize that there's no possible way I could be lying. There's no possible way I could be given the accurate descriptions that I give without having actually seen the object. After all, look at all the people in our day who try and fall well, well short. For me, it's obvious. The guessers of today have no clue. We all live in a clueless world, oblivious to the facts and the real details of what really happens between the Earth and the Moon. And that's a scary thought, really. But that's the way it is. I want to point out that I am listed on my feed is listed. The feed for my podcast is listed on many podcast directories. And that's where the majority of my listeners come from, is through those directories. I want to thank the people who listen to my Blog Talk Radio Show / Return Viewers Guide book through podcast directories. I really appreciate it. And so thank you very much. And I'm just going to just confirm something here. My actual... my actual show page at Blog Talk Radio is blogtalkradio.com/returnviewersguide. Excuse me. And people are tuning in through podcast directories, and there's many, many, many of them, more than I can actually mention here. If anyone at any one of those podcast directories has a promo that they would like me to play for them, to promote their podcast directory, I'd be happy to do so. Email me and let me know where I can go download it, and I'll be happy to play a promo for your podcast directory. And thank you for letting me list my show, submit my feed, and list my show on your podcast directory. Thank you very much. And one of the places where I am listed is the Canadian Podcast Buffet. Definitely check that out. Google that, Canadian Podcast Buffet. I really want to thank the guys for listing me there. And you can also find me at parapods.com.
Are you a paranormal radio show host? Your podcast not getting enough hits? And you want more? There is a brand new solution for you. A free podcast directory for your paranormal listening needs. Visit Parapods at www.parapods.com. That's www.parapods.com.
On my page, music at returnguidebook.ca/music.htm. I have a music credits page that provides links to bands and artists that I play. And I want to thank Aerial Publicity. It's all through them. And I want to thank them very much for accepting me in their membership. And I would like to point people towards them. You can find a link for them on my music page. You'll find a link to the music page on all my pages. Check out Aerial and sign yourself up there. They got a great, great, fantastic lineup of music there. You'll find something for sure that you like and that your listeners will like, so check it out. And I just want to mention that I have a disclaimer on that page, and the disclaimer reads, none of the bands / artists that I play endorse, support, or are affiliated with me in any way. I incorporate musical breaks within most of my shows because it's a nice change of pace a welcome break because I enjoy doing so and because promoting bands / music is a positive thing to do. And I am very, very pleased to be able to play music. I always wanted to do something like that. In the meantime, now I can, and I have been. Some of the shows I don't actually get to it, and that's okay. You know, my mouth tends to go on and on and on sometimes, in which I can take a second here to apologize for that. But in the meantime, I am going to take a break, go fill up my teacup, and I'll be back. In the meantime, I want you to check out this very, very cool band called Megaphone. And I'm going to be playing a tune called Write It Down. And actually, it appeals to me because writing it down is kind of like the ancient thing to do. When I think about writing it down, I think that's what I do. And I saw the ancient object, and I saw the changed light. And eventually, although it took me over 35 years, eventually I got around to writing it down. And maybe that's what you'll do after you see the ancient object cross down.
Hi, this is Matt Bloodwell from Megaphone, and you're listening to a track from our new album, Exit Silent Mode.
Down and what's the devil, miss? So I cannot wait to say what you say.
Hi, this is Matt Bloodwell from Megaphone, and you can find us online at megaphonemusic.net.
Hi, I'm back, and that was Write It Down, and that was Megaphone. And I'd like to thank the guys. Thanks a lot, Megaphone. Check it out. Go to my returnedguidebook.ca website/music page and follow the links to Megaphone. And also check out the links to the other bands I have listed there. And once again, I'd like to thank all of those bands and all of those musicians, even though most of them don't actually know what I do. Though we're all following each other on Twitter and Facebook and all that sort of thing. Like I said, they are not affiliated. They don't endorse or support. And most of them probably don't even actually know what my topic is. But that's okay. Eventually, they'll know, and they can also know that many people will eventually listen to the show in the archives and hear their tunes. And so I'm glad to be able to promote them. And I've done so much talking here tonight that I haven't actually got to Return Viewer's Guide 2, Part 3 yet. But I want to make a basic point here, and that is if you're looking at the archives, and you might want to start with part one, part two, part three, go in order, because jumping in at part three or four can sort of leave you going, what? And that's the effect anyways. It's just that it gets worse if you jump in the middle. And also backing up here to the bit about the space historian accusing me of lying, basically, when I mentioned about the standing stone craters on the object. It's not his fault that he can't believe me. I expect people not to believe me. That's a huge point that I'm always trying to make. People can't believe my descriptions. And he actually just couldn't deal with it anymore because we were, even though we had made good progress and I was learning about orbits and escape velocities and this and that, it got to the point where it was, he was realizing that if what I was saying was true, it's just too fantastic. And when I mentioned about the vertically standing crater rim pieces, the standing stone craters on the object, he knew right there that the fact is, if that is true, then this is huge. This is off the scale, because the secret of the standing stone circles on Earth is such a big mystery and so deep and so ancient and so primeval that, you know, it just doesn't get any deeper or more primeval and hard to figure out. Well, it's not hard for me to figure out, and it's, like I said, not because I'm so smart or anything, but that's what you see when you look at the object. So for me, growing up, that's just the way it was. This is, you know, I saw the standing stone craters, and then eventually growing up, I saw my first standing stone circle, and I knew exactly where it came from and what it was, what it was supposed to represent, and how each of those crater rim pieces cast its own shadow. And this is very, very special, and this is why the ancient people built these things. And all the business about moon alignments and solstices and predicting eclipses and all that, if they did set these stone circles up this way, and a lot of experts feel they did, it probably related to, in my mind, primarily predicting the return of the object. What could be more important than that? In the meantime, if it does all these other wonderful things, and, you know, great. They just incorporated more great things into it. But the fact is, a standing stone circle on Earth is a copy of a crater on this object. And when he heard me say that, he was actually at the point where he was talking about trying to get amateur astronomers to, you know, on a search on this, but he mentioned, oh, but we can't mention the craters, which is ridiculous. I mean, how can you not mention the craters? It's like, you know, if you're looking for a certain car, but you better not mention what color it is. You know, it's kind of, let's just say, stupid. And I'm not saying he is, but just for me, it's ridiculous. But for him, he knew that for credibility's sake, it couldn't have this on it. And so this is where he basically, we ended our conversation very shortly after that with him accusing me of wanting to become well known and basically accusing me of lying. And it's too bad, you know, but that's what happens. This is just so big, so profound, and you can go up to a person that's respected. This guy's got access to the vaults at NASA. I can maybe even said enough so far for people to understand who I'm talking about. But, I mean, you know, everyone's, in the end, everyone's accountable for what they say and do. And the fact that I spent 2 or 3 hours with this fella and put this on the table for him, and then we left under those terms, we'll become well known one day. I'm not going to go around attacking people, but also I'm not going to lie and say I'm going to protect people from what they might not want out there about this. You know, I'm not out there to make enemies or cause problems, but you know, the simple fact is I saw the object, and if you want to accuse me of lying, then go ahead. Go ahead and accuse me of lying. Later on, you'll be faced with the fact. The fact is, and all the facts that will line up, and you'll realize that I saw the object, and that you'll also know that I'm just simply trying to do the right thing with what I know from what I saw. And it's not about me trying to become well known. That's like the opposite of how I actually live and want to live. But I'm stuck in a very difficult situation. I walk through the door of someone who I know can help, and they turn me away accusing me of lying. And they had their chance to make a difference, and they decided to accuse me of lying. And, oh well, you know, it's hard that that happened in front of my kids. What am I supposed to say, you know? My kids believe me, and I have them to be accountable to, and they will not be ashamed of me. They know that I've said that before, and I'll say it again. They're the ones I'm responsible to, not ancient history experts or the military or the government or NASA or any scientist or any ancient history or space historian. I'm accountable to my kids. They're at the top of the food chain here, not you or anyone else. And so there's no way I would ever do anything to hurt my kids. And lying about this would be devastating for them, because it just would turn out that it would be something that would be a huge shame for them to have to bear. Even though if I was lying, it shouldn't be. They would certainly feel shame for my actions, and I would never do that to my family or my kids. And I am accountable to them, and they will not be ashamed of me. And jumping ahead here, or back, depending on how you want to look at it, I've named the site of the valley after my kids, the Ancient Valley, along the lines of the naming rules, what naming rules page. There are no rules, and the valley is part of our family tradition. When my kids see the object and see the valley, they're going to say to themselves, this is the, because of course they'll have to say it to themselves, because they'll be individuals looking through telescopes, ordinary people looking up at the right time, and they're going to see the valley, the ancient valley that all the ancient people saw and named, the valley where the shadow travels through. Call it the whatever valley you want, but the shadow travels through this valley. This is the valley that the shadow travels through. And I traveled through that valley on basically the point of that shadow, and it was good. And I saw the awesome good. And they will too, hopefully. And when they see the object and they see the valley, they're going to see the place that their dad named for them. And it is their valley, according to our family tradition. And it's a very, very special site. And I feel very fortunate. But in the meantime, I am accountable to them, not to anybody else. I'm accountable to myself, of course, my family, and my children especially. And they'll remember that day too. They still talk about it. And It's very, very actually unfortunate that it turned out that way. But it was really a glimpse of reality for us, because, and for me too, in a lot of ways, even though I knew it's too hard to, for people to believe, and I've been saying that for a long time previous to that meeting that day, it is too hard. And you listening to this show, my previous shows, you're gonna know exactly what I'm talking about. This is just too hard. It's too hard for you to believe. And this is just too big for me. What am I supposed to do? You know, this. How do I do this so that it's done right? Not so that people can believe me. That's impossible. But what do I do to make sure this is done right? Well, I suppose one thing I could do is talk less and get down to business here and get to the topic of tonight's show. But, you know, I haven't got there yet. The fact is, this is very difficult to describe, and this is very difficult to do. And I have made a huge effort to get the right information out there, and I'll continue to do so. And the point that I left off last time in part two was roughly around point 20 on Return Viewer's Guide number 2. And right at this point in the event, it's all about the shadow traveling over the surface of the object and then crossing off the object into the changed light. This is the transition point here. Point 23, as the wave of the shadow travels, a series of tall individual shadows emerge beyond the shadow's edge. These individual shadows travel further and faster than the edge of the shadow's wave. And these individual shadows reveal themselves before the shadows cross off the object into the changed light. You'll see them on the surface of the object. And this is a situation where it really, really is about a boundary area. There is a boundary area between the real hard ground of the object, even though it's just the remaining light, the light that's stationary. The object is actually already rolled down and is rolling down away. But you're looking at the light from the hard ground of the object. There's the boundary area, which is the upper right area of the object and its shape. And then there's the changed light. And this is in Return Viewer's Guide number 2, around from point 21, from 20, 21 through 23, 4, and 25, is about the shadow traveling over the surface of the object and into the changed light, crossing off the object into changed light, whatever the heck that is. But it's about the horizon of the object. And this is a special thing, because as the shadows travel off the object, so does the place you see from. And when I talk about the far slope oriented towards the valley in the distance and everything like that, and the incredible brilliant shapes arrayed on the far slope, you are actually already seeing from within. You're seeing from up there when you look down over the object's upper right horizon down the far slope, and it's just there to see. You have no choice. If you're looking at it, you will be seeing the far slope. And as soon as you see the far slope, you're seeing from beyond the horizon. And really, it's all about that transition point between the object, what you see there, and then seeing from within the changed light. And you'll see in the magical way that the changed light allows you to see before that point, because you're already looking from above the object's surface. But when you cross over into the distance, after you cross the horizon, that's when it really becomes overwhelming in so many ways and really special. And these are, and in my guide, I talk about the idea of looking around. You have time and you need to look around and take in as much as you can and really concentrate on the idea of remembering what you see, because you're at this point, depending on how old you are, you're not going to get another chance to see this. Every 43 years, you know, comes along every 43 years, and you're just not going to get another chance. And so take it all in while you can. You have, in my guide, I talk about how many seconds you have from one point in the event to another point in the event. And I do try to talk about the timeline because I understand that's very important. This is an extremely fast-paced series of very special sites and events. And you need to get a real handle on the timeline. Now, on my next show, I'm going to spend some more time with this guy instead of just rambling on here. And so I got to apologize to people for the way I've been rambling on. You know, I haven't been on for a while, and I have some frustrations and with the situation. On the other hand, there's been some really positive developments. You know, I really get the feeling that there's some important groups of people that are getting up to speed on this again, finally, and or just finally. Cut the again out of there. But that's encouraging to me because there's a lot of important groups that need to know about this. And so sort of like behind the scenes kind of thing, there's some really good things happening. At least that's my sense, you know, without being able to get into a lot of details. You know, that's the sense that I have. So I want to pass that on to you, and because, you know, that's important. And the idea that there is such a thing as a safe return is important, and that I think really needs to be put out there front and center. And you know, there's, well, why doesn't the government tell people about aliens if there is such a thing? Oh, they want to avoid mass panic. Oh, if the government knows about this object and what this and that and this and that, why don't they tell people? Well, they want to avoid mass panic. Well, you know, if there is a downside to this, it's going to be really bad. And I don't think lining up for canned goods at the grocery store while this is all coming to pass is going to make any difference for you. You know, if there's a negative, it's negative. In the meantime, there is such a thing as a safe return. That's the part that people need to focus on. In the end, you know, that's what's important, is the idea of a safe return. That is real. That is not guessing. That's real. The downside part, if there is one, that's guessing. That's admitting that there is a possibility of that. But, you know, it's about the idea of a safe return. That's what has to be put out there front and center, not the idea of doom and gloom. The change light is the ancient thing people wrote about. When you read your ancient texts, you're reading about change light. This is positive. This is where I get my hope from. Because when I read about destruction, I know I'm reading about the changed light in many, many cases. It has a lifespan. And the end times for me have nothing to do with the end times the way other people in the world look at it. End times for me are the end times of the changed light. The light lasts, but it doesn't last forever. It has a lifespan, it ages, it destabilizes, and it becomes unstable. Disintegrates, breaks apart, whatever, it's done. Whatever wave we're talking about, whatever area of light, it has its lifespan, and it will end. And so when I read about the signs of the end times and the human-looking figures, say, perhaps getting shorter as one of the signs of the end times, I know they're talking about changed light. That's easy. That's not hard at all. So that's hope. That's the idea that destruction has to do with the end times of the lasting light. The world, the region of light, comes to an end. This is a positive. That's the natural way of things. And it will be rebuilt again. This is what happens every time. So this is when the mountain rises and you see the sunken room. I mean, it happens over and over again. And then it ends. And so there's so many positive reasons why we can all have hope. On a negative. So this is what I want to get out there. It's the idea of hope. There is such a thing as a safe return. My descriptions match the object exactly. So when you see the object, you'll know that, in fact, there is such a thing as a safe return. That's a positive. That's where I want to be. And so check my returnviewersguide.ca website and check my returnguidebook.ca website in support of my book. But also check the content of my book online. And continue to listen to my shows. I want to thank people for that again. And I want to thank everyone who's checking out my website. I appreciate that very much. all those non-referring links. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And keep emailing me around. I see a lot of people doing it. Once again, there is such a thing as a safe return. Returnviewersguide.ca, returnguidebook.ca. I look forward to next time. Good night for now.